You are listening to The Pulse, Rod Murray's e-learning tech podcast, formerly Rod's Pulse Podcast, number 97.
Hi, this is Rod Murray. Glad to be back. That was a clip from the well-known set of violin concertos called The Four Seasons by Vivaldi. Since we're well into autumn, I thought I'd play the Allegro movement from Concerto No. 3 in F major, also known as the Autumn Concerto. It's performed by the American Baroque Orchestra and will be played in full at the end of my podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Inside Higher Ed, the online source for news, opinion, and jobs for all of higher education. As always, I'll post the links to all of the things we discussed today on my show notes at www.rodspulsepodcast.com. There you can also subscribe to the podcast via email or your favorite RSS reader, or just search for Rod's Pulse Podcast in iTunes. Let's move on to my main topic today, ePortfolios. I'll be interviewing Dr. Trent Batson. He's the executive director of the Association for Authentic, Experiential, and Evidence-Based Learning. That's certainly a mouthful. It's abbreviated AAEEBL, and they pronounce it ABLE. And you can locate the group at www.aaeebl.org. Trent was formerly an English professor, but most recently he worked at the Office of Educational Innovation and Technology at MIT. Since 1986, he's been the director of 7 large grant-funded technology and learning projects. You can follow him at www.trentbatson.com. I first learned about Trent from his many articles in Campus Technology Magazine, where he's the senior contributing editor. If you're interested in ePortfolios, like I am, you can't miss his most recent article on ePortfolios. It's called A Survey of the Electronic Portfolio Market Sector Analysis and Surprising Trends. And of course, we'll be talking about that today. You can find the link on my show notes. We'll try to answer the questions, what is an ePortfolio? How are they used? How do they relate to learning management systems? And what's the future of ePortfolios? So without further ado, here's my interview with Trent Batson. Trent, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today.
Oh, it's a real pleasure, Rod.
As my audience knows, we're going to be talking about ePortfolios, and perhaps we could just start out with what's your definition of an ePortfolio, and how did you get involved with them?
All right, I'll start out first with the definition, and there is no easy definition, but it is basically an electronic portfolio is basically a digital archive that is kept generally of formal educational work. That's just like the bare minimum description. But electronic portfolios also, the term tends to include also assessment management systems that are owned by the institution to track student progress toward learning outcomes. And usually that tracking is used to create reports for accreditation or reaccreditation of programs. That's the assessment management side of electronic portfolios. The other side is the personal portfolio that is, quote, owned by the student in the sense that that is their personal space. They have control over who sees what. Each piece of evidence, artifact, like an assignment or a video clip or audio clip that students put into an electronic portfolio can then be classified as, you know, public, private, or can be viewed by these people and so forth. So to the extent that they control access to their own artifacts, then they do own that space. People have seen in this basic database functionality a lot of potential, for students to start working outside of the classroom and uploading evidence of their work through their smartphones and therefore extending the classroom enormously. And also people are starting to see that to some extent, electronic portfolios can allow students to become more like freelance learners, not always just listening, but doing. So that's why we call ourselves authentic and experiential as part of our title for the association.
You mentioned, too, that I think the sort of the main functions of ePortfolios, sort of the container for student work, I guess, you know, is reminiscent of an art student carries around their portfolio, except this is an electronic version. And then the type that is really focused on assessment and perhaps even accreditation. Can they be part of the same ePortfolio, or are they better separated into two different kinds of products? Not having a lot of direct experience with them, it seems like it could be a pretty complex setup.
Yeah, that's sort of like struck right at the heart of one of the major conflicts. Trends over the last 25 years or so about how adults learn, and I am calling college students adults, how adults learn is, of course, that learning starts with experience. Experience means not hearing someone else's analysis of the experience, but themselves' perceptions about their experience, and then eventually developing conceptions. So it's sort of like that three-stage experience that a lot of learning theorists are talking about, where for learners, you start with the basic experience of doing something, being an archaeological dig or interviewing students or interviewing people on the street about some issue, for example. So that's the experience, and then the learner would then develop perceptions about that, some basic level of understanding. That was an interesting conversation with that person, but this one, that wasn't so good. So I'm beginning to learn, I'm beginning to have perceptions about how to bring out good interview responses and so forth. So those are perceptions. And then after doing that for a while and thinking about it for a while, then the student who is working on this project to interview people on the street would then begin to develop conceptions, finding, I'm seeing certain trends here, seeing that people are saying this and not that. And I'm seeing that people are afraid to talk about this particular, part of the issue. So that's the conceptual level. And the argument is that when students are in a classroom listening to a professor, the professor has gone through those stages of experience and perceptions and is already at the conceptual level. And so then, in a sense, the professor is trying to do all the learning work for the student, not allowing them to go through the experiential level and the perceptual level, and then presenting them at the conceptual level. And this is why so often students say that the course seems, owned by the instructor and out of touch. So the basic idea of the portfolio is that we can now more and more aggressively allow students to have that experience, develop perceptions about it, and then eventually, through guidance from the instructor, develop conceptions that are aligned with the particular discipline that the student is taking a course in. So electronic portfolios have the potential for supporting education around the world in transforming more to a student-centered educational model. But because students collect evidence of their work in portfolios, there's also a rich data mine to use to also then report on the progress of cohorts of students to accrediting agencies. So the institution has a lot of interest in collecting information from the student, as a whole, as a cohort, and then reporting from it. And in fact, that particular part of electronic portfolios, the assessment management part, dominated the market in 2005, 2006, 2007. And that was what companies were designing for, was building assessment management systems and calling them electronic portfolios. There was among many of us in the ePortfolio community outrage about this direction of the market, because those systems, while meeting the needs of the institutions, were giving short shrift or no shrift at all to the student interface and the student part of the module. The market has shifted quite dramatically now, and all of the providers, and I just did that article, as you said before, which was a survey of all the major providers of electronic portfolio technologies. And now there's much more recognition that the big market is really the students and that whole personal portfolio element. Because after all, students are only, citizens who happen to be enrolled in a college for a few years or a few semesters. But they have a whole lifetime where they may need a portfolio. So the ultimate big market is, of course, the cultural market. ePortfolios as a cultural tool sold individually by these ePortfolio providers. And that seems to be the way the market is trending. So the idea is, as I say, unbundle. I think people, that's a kind of a technical term. I mean, unbundle in the sense of having the personal portfolio as a separate module or a separate product, and the assessment management system still intact at the university. And of course, Web 2.0, the idea is that you can separate the data from the functionality, and programs can still, applications can still communicate with each other. So I don't mean unbundling the personal portfolio or the student portfolio from the university, but unbundling in the technical sense of having it be two data sets, two data constructs, so that the personal portfolio can develop, you know, like a Web 2.0 kind of application that's highly intuitive and easy to use and has a lot of, you know, intelligence built into it to recognize what the user needs at that particular time and so forth. And so that seems to be the trend in the market, is to separate the functionality, even though you continue to then report from the student portfolio to the assessment management system during enrollment.
Right. It would seem to me that if students are required to submit their homework, their projects, and everything into an LMS, that an assessment system should be able to draw on all of that without having the student sort of, you know, hand pick what content they want to put into some separate system. So I could see what you're saying, that this would make a natural way to divide it up.
Right. I mean, everyone seems, well, there seems to be a tendency in the technology market is to think that the more you can automate systems, the better. We automated Wall Street and they developed financial systems that got out of control. No one even understood them anymore. And we had a real problem. So complete automation sometimes is not the best, you know, to have certain human intelligence intervening in different parts of the process. And so, I mean, there's nothing to say that you know, a teacher couldn't see that a student has done the work satisfactorily in by looking into the student's portfolio through permission by the student, and then just simply entering that into the assessment management system. That doesn't need to be automated. I mean, you can have, you know, because basically it's just all saying is, you know, checking a cell in the assessment management system to say, okay, this student has done satisfactory work in this particular rubric toward this learning outcome.
You mentioned, of course, that the students may need to use their portfolios as they move from school to school. Many students transfer, or they might want to show a portfolio to their instructor. Are there standards that are being developed to enable the sort of moving of portfolios?
Well, people have been working on standards. IMS did for a while, and there's a association or organization called PESC. And I can't quite remember it's something like post-secondary standards and something else. It's a semi-government kind of supported effort to also create standards. I think the problem is that when you have a, you know, highly volatile market like electronic portfolios, like IT in general, where, you know, as we all know, I mean, programs, applications come in 1 year, and by next year there are, you know, 80 million new users for that application, like, you know, the iPad or the iPhone. So, you know, to develop standards around what we have now, when we know in a year from now the whole market will be completely different, it just doesn't make sense to me. I don't think we need standards. I think what we need is, you know, we need interoperability to some extent. We need the ability for students to have different kinds of portfolios that they've purchased, maybe even in high school, and have, you know, used. And of course, we're now having students who have been out in the workforce and now back in community colleges. So we have all ages. They may have had a portfolio at different places. No reason why they shouldn't have their own personal portfolio that they can still set permissions for, you know, any institution where they are. I think we need to let the marketplace play out there, because I believe that electronic portfolios will become a popular general market product that people will. It's not like Facebook. People say, well, it's just like Facebook or like, you know, LinkedIn or something. It's not at all. It's a personally owned space where you have your own records and you set your own permissions as to who sees it. So there is a lot of people who, and certainly other countries, England and Wales and Australia, New Zealand, Japan, India. I mean, they're all, most other countries in the world are focusing on workplace, workforce development as for a portfolio. So certainly the idea of lifelong portfolios is very active from a global viewpoint. We're just sort of getting there now in the United States because we don't want governments providing portfolios as they do in these other countries. So I think that's we can't set standards when the market is still evolving so rapidly.
With the explosion of a student-provided portfolio, you know, I can imagine tools evolving that automatically analyze the content of the portfolio. Do you see anything happening in that area? Would there be, artificial intelligence that would, scan the text, or who knows what? Or is this too far out?
No, I think that has to happen, because if you start, when we say artifacts or evidence is more the more general term, when students or learners or people have evidence from years and years and years of experiences, you need to you need to have a very robust management tool to manage, hundreds or even thousands of artifacts. So we need a much better, and most of the portfolio providers are moving this direction, but having a much better system of metadata provided for students, metadata systems, and some sort of semantic search capabilities. I mean, we find this absolutely in Google. And so, there are algorithms out there. I mean, search, you go into LinkedIn and it says, you may know these people. How does it know that? It's a pretty quick search and a pretty strong management of varying evidence. And so, yes, electronic portfolios exactly need that, because if you have evidence and you remember it by a particular geographical location where you gather that evidence, or a particular time, or with a particular person, you need to be able to have a tagging system that does work internally to help you find, you just have, more of an associational retrieval system. It was winter of 07 and I was in South Africa and I was with Mary, and I want to find that piece of work. So, yes, I think, and that's something I asked all of the e-portfolio providers when I did the survey this summer. And some of them are moving in a direction to, toward that, but it's not anywhere near rapidly enough, I don't believe. So, yeah, basic question is, yes, I see that happening, not quickly enough, however.
How do you see the relationship between the LMS and the e-portfolio? Do you require, or do you think it's best that the tool be well integrated with an LMS, or is that not required?
No one is particularly asking for that anymore. That was a big, big question at first. Can we submit work both to the portfolio and to the LMS? And again, it was a question about automation. Should we eliminate, having to upload to two different systems? We can't, that seemed intolerable for some reason. LMSs will always be just within an educational context. That will never become a popular item for people to buy and keep. You don't want to buy LMS to play around with on the weekend, right, for your own personal pleasure. But electronic portfolio, you would. That's like a personal scrapbook, but it's, writ large. So that is something that will eventually become, and it could be within a year or two, because portfolio providers are starting to sell individual accounts now. So that could be something that will be purchased by tens of millions of people. And so they're going off in completely different directions. And of course, with the partnership between Google and Pearson on the new free LMS that's in the cloud, the traditional LMS is at stake, of can it sustain itself as a installed on-campus technology. Those days may be fading.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up if you didn't. So that's right. That's interesting, because it would seem to me, you talk about semantic analysis of the student's portfolio. It seems like Google has the tools, to do something like that. Although I forget where I saw it. Google was sort of backpedaling a little bit, saying that it wasn't really a partnership with Pearson, that they weren't getting into the LMS business. but it seems like they are already in the portfolio business with Google Profiles, and you know, I could see an expansion or some mashup of Google Profiles and Google Plus, and it seems like they have the wherewithal and the means to offer something like that.
Yeah, that's correct. That's a good point. I think that didn't Google say they don't? It's not a shared product.
Right. I think Pearson is like other third-party companies in the Google Apps marketplace. They allow us to use Google as a repository for files, but beyond that, it sounds like it's purely a Pearson product.
Mm-hmm. Right.
How did you get involved with the ePortfolio? It seems like you're the man. You're the expert. How did you get involved in this from being an English professor?
I've been involved for 25 years as an English professor. I was, even as an English professor, teaching literature. In most English departments, you still have to teach composition. And so I was teaching composition and having the usual problems. We're talking in the classroom, and then the students write at home, and they have trouble, and they don't write very well, and it's frustrating, and everyone's unhappy. And then I found live chat to do teach writing via writing. So my writing class shifted from talking to doing in-class writing using a chat system that we shared in the room. And the students got completely engaged in that. Their writing improved enormously. And so I said, oh, okay, computers can make a big, big difference. So I, you know, got involved. So that was how I actually started moving into the IT path. And then I became an information technology director at a couple of different universities. But before I stopped teaching, I did use portfolios also. And I found that, just like the chat system, made a big difference in terms of student engagement. When I was working at the University of Rhode Island, there was already interest in having an electronic portfolio system for the campus. So as the new director of information technology there, I got directly involved with trying to find a platform. And we didn't have one in 2001, 2002. So I eventually became chair of the board of the Open Source Portfolio Initiative, which was funded by Mellon, and which is now part of Sakai. So I was actually involved in developing an electronic portfolio in the middle of the last decade. So I've been working very heavily with electronic portfolios for 10 years. And I've stuck with it because I see, as I've mentioned already, I see the great potential for electronic portfolios being one of the key technologies that will help all of education transform into a more student-centered educational design.
Well, listen, we're getting near the end of our time, and I just thought if you had any final comments about the future of ePortfolios, although we did talk a little bit about that, and anything else that we should be looking out for?
Well, I'll just mention, ABLE, it's called the Association for Authentic Experiential and Evidence-Based Learning, which is a long phrase, and that turns out to be ABLE, A-A-E-E-B-L, which looks unpronounceable, but we actually call it. And so ABLE.org is on the web, and we have 4 conferences a year. We partner with ACNU on their ePortfolio Forum. We are partnering with the Sloan Consortium on the Emerging Technologies Conference that they hold every year. We also sponsor a conference in Germany and one in Australia. So electronic portfolios are indeed growing rapidly. We also have a new peer-reviewed, double-blind scholarly journal published at Virginia Tech. They have dropped the university, just for tech now. That's called the International Journal of ePortfolio, IJEP, theijep.com. So the profession is evolving. We are doing more research, real research about portfolio studies and the association, and the profession is becoming stronger and the market is growing. So to me, electronic portfolios are something that is, in a sense, the virtual car of the future, It's a way for people to manage their digital identity. So that's my closing statement.
Great. Well, listen, this has been very valuable to me and I think my audience. And I want to thank you so much for taking the time.
Well, Rod, it's been a real pleasure and good luck with everything.
Thank you. I hope you learned more about the state of ePortfolios. I know I certainly did. And I'll be very interested to hear your feedback as well. So please stay tuned for Autumn from Vivaldi's Four Seasons. Until next time, have a great week.
that's it for today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to give Rod feedback. You can leave comments on his blog, send email to rod@rodspulsepodcast.com, or leave audio feedback on his comment line at 610-616-2199. The preceding audio commentary is the product of the author, Dr. Rodney Murray, and does not represent the official viewpoint of the University of the Sciences or any other institution or company.